Blog Talk Radio.
Reverend Edward Pinckney, the only pastor in the history of mankind to ever be sent to prison for quoting the Bible. I tell you, we had a tremendous week this week. We had our world famous governor, James Granholm, to initiate a hostile takeover of the city of Benton Harbor. We even had three black commissioners to go along with the program. So we know that they all has been bought out, sold out to the people. But I tell you, we had a good week today. I had a good opportunity to go to the courthouse and check out the scenery at the courthouse. But I'm happy today. I'm happy today. I tell you, this has been a tremendous experience just watching what these guys do and how they managed to take over the city of Benton Harbor. Nobody would believe that a governor would come in here and take over the city of Benton Harbor for Whirlpool. That's right, Whirlpool Corporation, the largest appliance, the largest washer and dryer, the largest there is in the world. They have a monopoly on washer and dryers and stove and refrigerators. They control over 60% of all washers and dryers. And I tell you, Representative Fred Upton, he's the heir to Whirlpool. He helped engineer all this. You know it's against the law to have a monopoly, but we have one here in the city of Benton Harbor. Whirlpool, a international company, is now, as of now, has a monopoly. But listen, let me get to some of my guests, and I am so happy that you're back with me, Ralph. Ralph, are you there?
Happy to be here. I love the nature of the program. I love your work. You don't just talk about things. Your talk is about the work you do. And as our famous Queen Mother Moore used to say, show me 10 acts that you did, and you get 1 minute of speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And if she were able to enforce that, we'd have a very silent group of people out here.
Oh,
you would be one of the few people able to speak. So I love to be on the program with you, and I try to keep up. And, you know, by doing things, being out there every day.
Mm.
And I would like to remind people, when you think of Whirlpool, and when they give you the give back money, whatever, if it has Whirlpool on there, the answer is no thank you. And say, if it doesn't have Whirlpool on there, does Whirlpool supply this company with the equipment and with another name? Because they do that also.
Oh, absolutely. You know, Ralph, what they're doing now, they receive stimulus money from our president.
Yeah.
$19 million.
Excuse me for chuckling.
Yeah, well, you have to chuckle on something like that. Whirlpool, a multi-billion dollar company, received $19 million in stimulus money. You see, it doesn't make sense to me. I don't know, Ralph. Maybe you can shed some light on that for me.
Yeah, it makes no sense to me, but I understand what he's doing and what his people have done. I'd like to go get a little history here. When we go back into the late 60s, the middle 60s, there was so much land lost by black people in the South. It went into record numbers in terms of the value of land, of money, that black people had lost due to rules and regulations and taxes. You know, before, I don't know, is that me?
That's you, go ahead.
Okay, before the movement of the 60s, this white South had gone berserk,
mm-hmm.
taking back land, throwing people off the land, the sheriffs were doing it, and they took more money out of the accumulated amount of money that black people had saved since Reconstruction and earned than ever before in history. And now we see a moment that they surpass even that.
Mm, interesting.
And the way they've done it, hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
The way they've done it was with the criminal criminal, and understand that criminal piece of paper called the subprime loan, which I recently heard Barney Frank say, no, wasn't recent, it was about 2 months ago.
Okay.
He says, we, Barney Frank, advisor to the president, congressperson, said, we're going to ban them. They haven't banned them yet.
No, absolutely not.
And now we find that the money lost by the black community in this scandal,
mm-hmm.
in this corrupt, thieving, lying organizations surpasses the money lost by black people in the 60s and 70s in the land with corrupt sheriffs who would kill you if you didn't move off the land.
And you know what?
They have sheriffs and they do it legally. If you don't pay the subprime loan, even if you pay it, there are conditions where you could be paying the loan and still lose your home and the value thereof.
Hey, Raph, listen to this. Even now, think about these loans. All these loans are insured anyway.
Yes.
With these foreclosures, the bank get their money because they insure all these loans. And
yes.
What they're doing, they're coming in and take. They really don't even want your home because the money is covered.
Mm-hmm. And
absolutely. Who would believe that a bank would come in, kick you out in the street, board up your home, won't move in it. If they can't sell it, they don't care because they got their money.
Yes, and you see, this is the point, you know, rapacious greed is an illness. And they call this system capitalism, but it never was capitalism. That's a euphemism for imperialism. You take from everybody else. It's a euphemism for genocide. They killed the Indians and had free land. It's a euphemism for slavery, free labor. So when somebody says capitalism, very few capitalists really existed. And one of the capitalists, for real, based on all of this robbery, genocide, slavery, was Henry Ford.
Yep.
And he recognized that when you operate in this system, you had to make a product that your workers could afford. He understood something. Now, here we have a situation where they're taking the workers out of it. There are no jobs, and they're looking to run a system with millions of people out of work. The system can't work because no one can buy anything. Now, did the government know that? You can't convince me that they didn't know that. They just decided that's the way they're going to do it. And as someone said to me, you know, as I speak about, you know, like this inequities in this society where money goes to the top, money goes to the rich. Somebody said to me, Ralph, what are you trying to do, start the class war? And I say, my answer is always, my dear, dear friend, the class war was started before I was born, before you were born. You remember kings and queens? That's the class war, and they've continued it. There were gains made by many white people in the 80 years of white affirmative action. And I use that to go back to the 30s when there was a depression. From that time to today, there was white affirmative action. You know,
mm-hmm.
we all know if you're black, you need not apply.
That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely, Ralph.
What is that about but affirmative action for white people?
Mm-hmm.
If you're Asian, you need not apply. If you're Mexican, you only need to apply for the lowest paid jobs. This is white affirmative action. Education is free education until black people come into the inner city. Then education starts to cost money.
Mm.
White affirmative action. So they built a country, white affirmative action, and white people say, hey, I did it. I did it on my own.
Mm-hmm.
Like you people. Oh, these are people who do not understand history. They do not understand economics. They are racist. They
yes.
do not want to know anything that would make it real in terms of they're better than no one. They're better than no one. You are as you do. And when they don't have affirmative action, then they become as poor as anyone else.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, you're right on point, Ralph. I think what you're saying is so tremendous. And I think people should know. You see, a lot of times, you know, people don't know. They don't take the time to find out. And what you have done, you have taken the time to find out about this. Affirmative action. White folks had it all along. And they still got it.
They still got it.
They still got affirmative action. We the ones who don't have it.
And when there was a suggestion and less than 1% of black people got affirmative action, white people went berserk. You know,
mm-hmm.
They're giving black people everything. And as a young Latino friend of mine said, all we want is the same thing you got, which you had all along.
Yeah.
That's all we want. And it's interesting. People said, hey, what about that? What about that? But we have short memories. We let it go.
Mm-hmm.
And the other most important thing besides money is education.
Absolutely.
I'm tired of Jesse Jackson telling people to go to school. First, you have to have schools.
That's right.
What we have are school buildings where the money goes in to the black neighborhood and white people take it out, and they do not leave an education behind. And I'm going to have to throw some of the black petty bourgeois into that, because as soon as they got a job, they began talking about young black kids as these people, and they don't want to learn. Where were you? Where do you come from with that? Everybody who's supposed to get an education does, and if they're supposed to get an education and they don't get it, it doesn't matter because they get a job anyway. This is what I'm talking about, white affirmative action. Look around your school building. See how much money goes into the public education and it used to go in. Our friend in the White House, Obama, is not even kidding about it. He's going to take it out and privatize it. But let me get back to the basic point I said. The other separation is education. There's economic separation and there's education separation. We have to deal with that. And the education separation comes first. We have to make sure that our kids have schools to go to. They don't. I hated school, and as you can see, I'm no dummy.
Mm.
Well, only when I figured out.
Ralph, let me ask you a question. In some states, no, in some cities, they're closing down half the regular schools. How do you feel about that?
You see, we allowed ourselves to be in that position because the schools were failing.
Mm-hmm.
That gives them an excuse to say, we have to change this. But they're not changing it to make it better. They're changing it to steal more money from it. They want to have corporate education. The corporations get the money, and you'll be left flat with no education. There is no proof that the privatized schools, and I'm talking about the charter schools,
are
any better than any other school. What that means is you could invest in a school and get paid for it. The same thing they did with so-called health care. It was health care for profit. That's why we're in trouble. Nobody can afford the premiums. And when you buy the premiums, you don't get health anyway. All you do is have a premium that says you're covered. You have a public school. You don't get the education anyway. They're going to charter schools, and it says you have school, and you'll be left flat there. This is why we must fight the private. The privatization of the public schools, because public schools started after the Reconstruction, and there's a series of laws that were built up over the years, but the laws give us protection from the law. Now, that's a joke. Give us the basis to fight for school, for an education. You take away those laws, and now you don't even have a basis to fight for an education. So we need to keep public schools, which have a tradition that we can base our struggles on, and say we must have a public education. Because without that, without any basis to fight, and a lot of people, not a lot, a very few people voted their rights away and says, no, we want a charter school. Well, by Charlie, your history.
Yeah.
Have
you noticed, though, they're privatizing everything inside the school system now, all the janitorial jobs, the kitchen help, everything, even the bus. You know, here in Michigan, what they did, they privatized the bus drivers. And what they did, here's the kick, they even sold them the bus. I felt that was way out of line and unusual. Who would believe that not only would you sell, they're supposed to be providing service for you, in return, what they do, they trick you out of your buses. That's what they did here in the city of Benton Harbor and privatized it. Now, let's say we wanted not to renew their contract. We would have to go out and buy new buses.
It's an interesting thing here. I believe I said it on your program, and I got a little negative response from that. One of the things I said is, well, I says they're building that wall across the southern border. They're talking about building a wall. And I said, I suggest they don't build it too high because we all may be jumping over it. They'll have a decent way of life.
Yes.
They're turning America into a third world country. They're privatizing everything. And here's the kicker. Here in New York, right north of New York City, across the George Washington Bridge, you're in Rockland County, and they privatized the water. But the problem with that is the price of the water is going up, and nuclear waste are in the water you're buying. And this is like, well, you thought you beat it. They're privatizing everything, putting the profit motive ahead of the motive of service or for service and goods that are public issues. Water is a public issue. Utilities should be public utilities. They're regulated. They're going berserk. And people are, the price of fuel is going up, although there's more fuel available, price fixing, and nobody's screaming.
Yeah.
Maybe when we get hungry, we'll be ready. But I'm just happy that you're out there, Reverend, and you're telling them. Tell them every week. Tell them, you know, as my mother used to say, tell them what you're going to tell them, and then tell them, and then tell them what you told them. And they make it happen.
I like
and
that.
And I'm listening. You must have known my mother, Reverend.
Yes. I love it. But you know, that is really, really something. But Rap, I really have something to say that's devastating to, I guess, to maybe it only affects the people that live here, but actually it affects everybody across the country. The Governor General Granholm, have came into our city and officially have taken over. We call it a hostile takeover. We have some major, major issues here. We have a major problem with this governor, Ralph. Matter of fact, she's $1.8 billion in the red, and she wants to come in and take over Benton Harbor because we $4.1 million in the red, and all we need is a consul or two to get back on our feet. She need a whole lot of more stealing to get herself back, get them on their feet. But
exactly.
Talk to us about takeover. How, you know, when these government comes in and take over your city.
It's happening all over the world. But you see, America is a place where because of racism, because of segregation, the intellectual segregation, because of social segregation, because of political segregation, we have not been able to forge a unified force big enough to fight governments. Europe, one of the governments over there, when they told them they had to have an austerity plan, they told the International Monetary Fund they weren't going to do it, and they should get the money back from the people they gave it to, because the people they gave it to never benefited them. So they said, they're not going to pay the money, and they're not going to have any austerity programs. And they told the IMF, get it back from the people who gave it to them. And if we were to say that here, if we were to have enough people to say, hey, did you get any money from the stimulus? You know, they didn't give me any. So then when they start talking about their austerity programs, my answer is, get it back from the people you gave it to.
Absolutely. And remember, once again, Ralph, it started right at the top.
That's
everything
right.
Everything starts at the top. That means that business is the same as usual. That's what they're saying.
Yeah, they're getting worse. When I see these homes of these billionaires, these stockbrokers, and you see the joke of capitalism comes out when they have, if you run a business and it doesn't work, you're fired. Money. Wall Street ran a business, it didn't work, they gave them bonuses.
Wait a minute.
And then Obama, when he was running terrible, then he gets in office, maybe they should get a 15% cut of their bonuses. Maybe they should get a 15% cut of their bonuses. Throw the rascals out. There should never have been any bonuses. Their company should have failed, and we would have started all over from scratch. Then we would have had to be real capitalists if we wanted.
Oh, absolutely. Hey, listen, Ralph, they were saying that if I don't know how true this is. They were saying if we did not bail out the banks, that the economy here in the United States would have collapsed. I'm not buying that.
No. What they did when they bailed out the banks is they bailed out the money to the top.
Mm.
All they had to do was take care of those subprime loans, take them over, and redesign them that there would be no subprime loan. All the loans would be the same. If it's not an interest, or reduce the interest so the people could stay in their homes, the people would continue buying, the economy would continue going, but they wouldn't have put money to the top instantly. This thing of, you know, the banks would have collapsed in the world, that's a lie. All they had to do was put the money to the people who had to spend it. And understand this basic reality in capitalism. Poor people have difficulty saving money because they need everything. They don't
right.
have enough money to put it in the bank. They have to buy food. They have to buy shelter. They have to keep their homes going. They have to buy their cars to go to work. They have to buy, and I say no one ever need buy clothing. Go to Salvation Army. They made enough clothes to last the next 10 years. But if people want to look in a certain fashion, the economy would have continued going had they put the money in the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Now they put the money in the top. The economy is stopped except for those at the top.
Oh.
Now, we live in this. So, it wouldn't have happened that way. It would have kept on going. But the people at the top would not have had. Can you imagine in a failed corporation to get a $9 million bonus?
Mm.
Failing? I know,
man,
when I ran my business.
And some people don't even make $1 million in a whole lifetime.
Yeah, this was intentional. They don't want the people in the bottom to have too much power.
Mm-hmm.
They want us to be scrambling from day to day for water, for our very existence, so that we don't have time to look around and see what's happening. And this is what happened to America. America never could tell the truth because to tell the truth would dispel the basic glue of the American society, and the basic glue of the American society was racism.
Mm.
If you dispel that, you know, then you would not have a problem, but people did not want to dispel that myth. These people are inferior. These people are less. Makes me feel better, and they are the excess labor.
Mm.
I can always work. When times are good, we bring them on. When times are bad, we lay them off. You remember, it wasn't, you know, in my lifetime, we were the last hired and the first fired.
Always. Always.
We were there as an instrument
mm-hmm.
of white affirmative action. They could always have a job. When times were good, we were included. When times were bad, they excluded us, and we continued. And now they come with this subprime loan, and here's the fact that I repeat over and over again, 70% of black people who got subprime loans were eligible for prime loans.
Mm-hmm.
Man, they're stealing. They targeted us. And, you know.
But don't you think that should be classified as stealing from the people?
Well, slavery was classified, and as I always say, you know, all money in America is bad until they give us back the money for slavery, until they
mm-hmm.
give Indians back the money for the land. All the rest of it is corrupt money.
Well,
and now they did it again.
And you know one thing? They're never going to give it back to unless we take it back.
Exactly.
You see, when you're in power, as long as you're in power, you're never, ever, ever, ever going to give back anything. But there's a possibility we could take it back.
Yes,
and
I think
that's what I'm looking at. That's why we gotta round up the troops, get the folks trained and ready and prepare to move this thing to a whole different level.
Well, that's why I like your movement out there with Whirlpool.
Mm.
If you want people to understand, even in this economy, our limited economic fortune, and we have gone through fortunes. You know, when I look at some of the figures that show who are people who buy brand names
mm-hmm.
without relationship to quality.
Mm-hmm.
Buy brand. Well, you know, like I lived in a time where black people would say this, they wouldn't buy anything other than a brand name. They wouldn't
absolutely.
Brand name. They wouldn't do a brand name.
And here's another thing, too. They wouldn't buy nothing but new cars.
There. And so now that's over, and I'm in New York, and I see young people still buying those Mercedes and Porsches, and you know, their view is, I only got a few years, so I'm going to live large. Few years, and living large to them is to have one of these cars.
Absolutely. They don't even have to have a place to live. All they need is a car.
No. We need a car.
Right.
But you see, that's because we were not able to educate them. And understand this, the most dangerous people, and I realize now in the 60s, you know, why did they consider me so dangerous? I didn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
All I said was, hey, we have to control our education budget. We have to control the schools because we're the only ones who are interested enough in our children to educate them.
Mm-hmm.
No people on the planet allow another person, another race, another group, another religion to educate their children except black people.
Mm.
We do it, and we do it lovingly.
Yeah,
and when you say that to people, they look at you for a minute, and I'm saying, now show me someone else. Show me anyone else who does it. And then it's, oh, my goodness.
And then they realize. You know, just like here, you know, they went out and got this white superintendent. She's an alcoholic. We know that. She went out and hired every white person that graduated from college that wanted a teacher job. The whole school, the whole district is full of white folks.
Yeah.
And at one time, we had all black teachers.
There.
Now, now what they have done, they even have dropped the curricula down so low now that, you know, they dropped it low, and then what they want the people here, the students here, to just apply themselves to what's below that. And I think that's ridiculous.
It certainly is. And see, you know, as Queen Mother Moore used to say to me, Ralph, you can't break a man's leg and expect him to win a race.
That's right.
Can't break. So we have had a broken leg. They is Ali Masri, when he does his 12-part history of Europe meeting Africa, he documents where they decivilized.
Mm-hmm.
And then they brought us here and continued the decivilization. And, you know, the insanity of the whites in the South during slavery has inculcated itself into the black culture.
Mm-hmm.
That was underneath, that was subjugated by the white culture. And one of the things I was thinking of is Michael Vick and his dog fighting.
Yes.
You know, what is that but an upper-class white sport of the South?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
All he was doing is he got a lot of money,
mm-hmm.
and he was emulating, you know, that culture, and they paint him as the worst man on the planet.
Oh, man, and,
Wait a minute. We have to study history. Michael Vick, what does he know about dogfighting? What he knew about it is he had a lot of money, and this was the sport of rich white folk in the South, in Texas. You know, I always wondered, you know, when I heard the expression out of Texas is, you don't got a dog in that fight.
Mm-hmm.
What's that mean? You know, and then somebody, I have no interest. Where did it come from? Rich white Texas ranchers, dog fighting. Well, you know, don't cheer, don't get involved unless you have money on it.
That's right. You don't
have a dog in that fight. And I'm saying, so, you know, we have gotten caught up in that. And I say to people, honestly, you know, I am caught up in the culture of white America.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe that we will not be free unless we get our freedom the same way it was taken from us.
Absolutely.
Now, that's the white culture.
And remember that that's the only way to get freedom. Freedom is never given.
And I don't flinch from that.
No.
Self-defense and self-determination.
Right. Freedom is never given. I don't care what you do. You know, there's never, ever a change without a conflict. I don't know. We can sit here and negotiate all we want. You're not going to get a freedom.
Yes.
You
and
can forget about that unless you're able to take it, unless you're able to show them that you can compete with them on that level.
Yes.
You see?
And what you're doing there, I love it, because once you teach people their economic power of togetherness, it can be translated into other things of togetherness, political correctness. We have to shut down that whirlpool. We have to hurt them. And I remember talking to a young man who was unemployed, and he lost his military benefits and the whole thing. And somebody was telling him who I was. I was on the other side of the street. They called me over, and he introduced me, and he says, you know, this guy's been telling me your history and who you are. And he says, but I have to say to you, he says, when I was in the Marine Corps and I was going strong, he was an airplane mechanic in the Marine Corps, he says, there's nothing you could have said to me.
Yeah.
He says, now that I have lost all of my benefits, now that I can't get a job, now that I'm living in the basements of people who are friendly, you know, like who knew me as a kid and say, well, clean up the basement and, you know, like you can live. He says, now I can hear you. He says, but then I couldn't have heard you. And I'm saying it's interesting that he was honest.
Yeah.
And maybe, just maybe, and I hate to think of this. I hate to think of people who are homeless. And when you get these cold, rainy days, we had an early spring here, and then suddenly it went to 27 degrees, and we're having rain mixed with snow and high winds. Homelessness. But maybe that's what it takes to wake us up.
Well, you know, here's one thing that we are going to have to do. We're going to have to, we're just one paycheck away from being homeless ourselves.
Hey, tell me about it.
It's just, you're just one paycheck away from being homeless. This is the way the system is. So what we have to do, we have to come together. We have to get every different type of person and let them understand this, that there, you're only one check away, that you need to stand up for what's right. See, what I try to do with people, I try to give them the other side. And I give them an opportunity to choose. And I let them know that you can be next.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
I remember when I was going through everything, the people, I mean, they was like, you know, they figured the system going to take him down. We're not going to be part of that.
Yes.
But after I started whooping on the system and spanking them, they decided now that they wanted to come out and support me.
Yes.
And now I got more supporters now than probably anybody you probably could think of. I have never realized that there were so many people, they love a winner.
Yes.
You know, and as long as we continue to win and do things, maybe we can really get a movement going.
Yes, keep telling the truth, because people will remember who told them first.
Mm-hmm.
You've been telling the truth for a long time. Keep it up, and this tree of truth has to bear fruit.
Oh, absolutely.
It will bear fruit. And it's, you know, when I think back over the history of education, and I'm saying we are a people, and we never get a chance to tell them, we are a people that fought for education. We risk beatings to learn to read. Slaves learned to read when it was against policy, practice, and law to teach them. If a religious person was caught teaching a slave to read, they were put out of the community. Slaves are unfit. But slaves worked at night and begged people to teach them to read, just basically reading. And now we have allowed them to put our minds of our children to the point where they don't want to learn anything. So,
no.
And then I says, well, what happened? How did we come from that point out of slavery into Reconstruction, setting up the first public schools, setting up the churches, setting up the community bakeries, setting up the community economy? How did we go from that to this?
Yeah. And, you know, the more you think about it, you know, it just tears me apart. When I think about what they have done to the people, our people, the system, we could say that. It's been the way it's been set up. It's designed to destroy our future. And the way you destroy the future of any race of people is deal with their children. Right. And, I said this once before, the story of the Pied Piper, that is one of the greatest stories I have ever read in my life. And the reason why it is so important, because this guy, the Pied Piper, told the people, you don't have to pay me if you don't want to now. I'm going to take away your future. I'm going to take away all your children.
Mm-hmm.
And without children, there is no future.
Yep.
And that is exactly what is happening, not just here in Michigan, but around the whole country.
Yes. You see, I remember driving down on a bus. I had a car. It was an old car. Only had one new car in my life.
Mm.
It was a friend of mine, like a dear, political, religious, hardworking, religiously working person.
Mm-hmm.
Religion at 14. The religion as a practice, but she practiced it for real without going to church. And her practice of her religion was to help the people, to educate the people, to help the movements, to support the movements with energy and her money. And I say all of that to say this. In the early 60s, riding through Harlem, I had an old car that broke down, and when we had meetings, I would never let Queen Mother Moore go home alone.
Mm-hmm.
In the Bronx. So my car broke down. I parked it. We got on a bus. We were riding across 125th Street in Harlem, and we were sitting together about 10 o'clock at night, and she says, look out the window, Ralph. And I looked, and she says, look very carefully. And I looked, and she says, what did you see? So I says, well, gee, I saw many people who do not understand
mm-hmm.
what's going on. And she says, no, that's not the point I'm making. What you see now is Harlem the way you will never see it again.
Mm.
This was in 1965.
Wow.
So I'm saying now, what's that?
Wow.
Like I will never see it again. And one of the things that when Elijah Muhammad came along and said we have to have 5 states in the South and we must ask the government for it, my response was no. We have the most valuable property in the country. We have the inner cities. We are here. We must control it. We must own it. And, well, as you know, black people were 40 years behind. They wanted to go to the suburbs, and every black person who got a nickel moved out of the inner city and went to the suburb, and now we see the most valuable property in the country, the inner cities, is taken over by those who understand the value of property.
Absolutely.
We are being moved out. I was in Detroit, and I said to one of the people at the big hotel there, the Auto Hotel, who was it, GM built the big hotel?
Absolutely.
I was saying to one of the black workers, I says, well, where's the black part of Detroit?
Yeah.
And she says, it's all black.
Right.
It's Detroit. Just step out the door.
Yeah.
You're in the black part of Detroit.
Uh-huh.
So I says, well, I want to go to the part of Detroit where black people control. And she says, none of it.
None. Not one drop. Right on. Well, listen, hey, Rap, hold that thought. I got a call on the line. Call, are you there?
Oh, yes. Hi. Hi, Reverend Pickney. This is Valerie again.
Hey, Valerie. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. I apologize. I missed you guys for a couple of weeks there. Tied up. But I'm just listening in comedy.
All right. Well, you just listen on and anytime you want to just jump in, just do so. Ralph, go ahead.
So, and when the young lady said that, I couldn't help myself. I just started to laugh, and she grinned. So I said, how are you? What field? So she had studied. She was in hotel management, and she was there. So I says, well, keep it going. As long as you're looking forward to doing something and improving yourself. So when I walked away with the person I was talking to. I says, well, this is uplifting because this young lady understands something.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. But you know one thing? When are we, the people, going to stand up and start understanding what's going on? Why do we have to continue What we do now affects not only us today, but also affects our children, our children's children in the future. When are we going to stand up and take a stand and say, we're not going to take this mess no more? Let me tell you one incident I had this week where a young lady was in a car accident. She was in a car accident, and she hit some white people. It was a car accident. They tried her for felonious assault. Felonious assault. And this jury, 11 whites and one black, found this lady guilty on two felony charges. My mind can't compute that. I keep telling people that if even when you had one black on that jury, he could have took a stand. Right. When are we going to take a stand, Ralph?
That's you're asking a question there, and you're talking about the most egregious of racist practices, and that is the double standard. And you see the Hydra head of the double standard in every area, and the Hydra head is Medusa's head with snakes coming out his hair.
Mm-hmm.
In every aspect of American life, the double standard. And all you have to do is say, let's reverse those facts, and let's make a judgment. Had a white person run into a black person,
no,
we have the same results. And anytime the answer is no, then you're dealing with the double standard.
Absolutely. Hey, Rap, if it would have been a white driver and two black people got hit, they would have took the white driver to the hospital and let the black people laying in the streets. That's exactly what they would have did. And then they probably would have gave them a ticket for jaywalking.
Right.
Yeah, probably.
And also gave them a little jail time. But the point is, we allow it, though. I don't blame these white folks for what they're doing. If you let them do it and get away with it, you ain't got nobody to blame but yourself.
Well, I would. It's almost comedy, but it's not funny to the person with the two felonies.
Right.
Get serious about, you know.
Oh, and look, she's going to be sentenced in about 45 days. She could be going to prison.
Yes.
And never, look, the thing is, and never had a criminal record in her life. But here's something just happened before that. There was a white guy who was drunk driving, killed the person, and they gave him 6 months in jail.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. See,
because of the double standard. And then nobody around here, this is what makes me mad and disgusted with the people around here. They don't stand up for nothing unless it happens to them.
Right. Right.
And you see, that is American. I remember being in Europe, in Paris, in an Irish bar when they found out I was from America.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to hear about America. And they says, as briefly and as succinctly as you can, tell us about America. And I thought for a minute, and I says, well, me, myself, and I, that's America.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's disassociated, unconnected, everybody's an individual, and and the black Americans are a part of that kind of thinking. Me, myself, and I. And no one else really matters. Now, we need to be together on a political philosophy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We have to become together with a political philosophy. And I don't, you know, it's to the point, and it always was that way, as my mother said, beauty is as beauty does.
Mm.
I want the people who are going to support the type of things I'm going to support. And those of us who have a political philosophy like you, Reverend, and all of the people who can have that political philosophy need to get away from me, myself, and I and start to saying us and we.
Mm-hmm.
We can't do it separately as an individual. And we have to have it together. But I have a friend who was very wealthy. Not very. He's wealthy compared to the rest of us black people. His father was from the South. He was a contractor, and he worked from the 30s, you know, in a neighborhood that has become, they call it the Gold Coast, and he worked all around, you know, the property next to park, the park in Brooklyn. what is the park in Brooklyn's name? Anyway, Prospect Park. And when he had 22 properties and his son sold the properties at the height of their economic power, and he's not into it, but he says, you know, I watch you. He says, you get up every day, you leave early in the morning, you come back late at night, you don't have much money, you're trying to organize people. And he says, but for me, he says, you take somebody's job. He says, they're jobless. He says, take somebody's home, they're homeless. He says, but when they're hungry, they're going to be ready to be organized. And when they're hungry, I'm going to help you if you promise me not to ask me for any of mine. And I said, well, you know.
Well, how does he plan on helping you?
Right.
No, he's going to support me economically. He
okay.
Says, and I'll get out there with you. He says, but they ain't hungry yet. And he says, and I don't think you can organize them. But when they're hungry, he says, you'll be able to talk to them. And he says, and I'm going to help you.
Hey, Ralph, I think you and I are on the same page right now. What you're saying and what I'm saying, the people are not hungry enough as of yet.
As of yet.
They are not hungry enough as of yet. Listen, I got a call on the line. Are you there, caller? Libby.
Yes, I am. I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Can hear you. How are you?
You hear
I'm
Ralph?
Good.
Say hi to Ralph.
How do you do, Ralph?
I'm doing well. I'm waiting with bated breath to hear. What do you have to say? I'm all ears.
Well, okay, this is the article for today. Now, the governor of Michigan has decided that the state of Michigan needs to do a hostile financial takeover of the city of Benton Harbor, which, by the way, has been in financial trouble for many, many years. But she suddenly decides now this needs to happen. And it coincidentally is occurring after a brand new and very excellent city manager has been hired in Benton Harbor. And there have been a city commission, it's like city council, elections. And 6 out of 9 of the new city commissioners are not stooges of Whirlpool, and they are not going along with the Whirlpool Corporation's demands, and this is a corporation that runs the whole area. So we have so far just one report that I could find, which is in the Herald Palladium newspaper. Some people call it the Herald Pollution. It's the company paper for Whirlpool. And so here's the report that we have. Let me see if this is a correct one. Granholm imposes an unnecessary financial takeover. This is from March 21st. Does that sound right? Maybe that's too long ago.
When was Friday?
Friday was
Okay, Friday was the 25th.
Yeah.
One thing I could read here is
Sunday.
There's one letter to the editor that I could read from George Moon, which says there is no reason for the state takeover of Benton Harbor.
Read it.
I have that right in front of me.
Very good.
Okay. Editor, receivership of Benton Harbor is not necessary. Forbes magazine listed Plante Moran in the top 10 in the country as one of the best companies in the country dealing with financial crisis. Plante Moran said Benton Harbor is capable of solving its own problems, and Jackie Bell is capable of performing her duties adequately. Now, who do you believe, Plante Moran or 3 city commissioners? Also, ex-city manager Steve Manning stated that he, along with Plante Moran, solved the city's financial crisis without any assistance from outside sources. So, Reverend Pinckney, that must have been a while ago, huh?
I know that letter. Go ahead. That's a good one.
Okay. Let's look at the big picture. The United States is in a depression and in receivership to China. Michigan has the highest unemployment rate in the nation. Detroit and Flint are broke. Michigan's retirement fund is millions in the red, and Michigan is in receivership to Washington, D.C. Now, I have no problem with accepting help from Lansing. Come on down and pull up a chair and let's hear what you've got. But please don't send a member of the current administrative team of Governor Jennifer Granholm, because they can't handle their own problems. Benton Harbor's problems are no different than many other cities in the country. It has nothing to be ashamed of. 2 years ago, I expected sincerity and civility in our governing body. We didn't get it. Let's work with the new city manager, Ronald Carter Jr., Mayor Wilsey Cook, and the new leadership. Together, we can solve this crisis. And that's from George Moon, who's a resident of Benton Harbor.
And an excellent person, let me say that. Ralph, after reading that, I'm surprised they even published that in the Herald Palladium. I'm shocked.
Yeah, well, you know, it's the same thing, as you had said earlier, that's taking place throughout the country. You are successful. You have proven success there. Now they want to come in and take your success and divvy it up for them. It's happened in California. The parts of California that were successful, they're looking to sell it off to private industry. They are going to give it back to the rich. You are capable of solving your problems, but they want you to be in the mix to solve the state's problems. So you know you're in good shape when they want to come running in there and take it over rather than watch what you're doing. And if they watch what you're doing, you will have all of the facts. There will be what did Obama promise us and not deliver for us, clarity. There will be, what's the word he used, to be able to see through? What's the word? Help me out here.
I'm not sure.
You will be doing it yourself, and you will see where the money goes. No, they don't need that. They want to come in and say they helped it, and then your money will disappear, but you won't know where or how it disappeared.
Absolutely. And Ralph, here's the thing that we've been talking about for years. We have allowed, these bad, not only administrators, but governor, elected officials to come in and do whatever they want, steal money, yet we still go back out and reelect them. I mean, it's like you're involved with them to help steal money from the people, yet you're not getting any other money.
Yeah. I'm anxious, as we have been talking about over the weeks, I'm anxious to see whether those of us who were emotional about Obama have finally gotten over it, or when we will get over it, or if we will ever get over it, because insanity can be described as the inability to perceive reality. And there are many of us who were unable to perceive reality, and I was going to talk about that today with the leftist conference, but we had other important...
Well, why don't you give us a little bit about the leftist conference, right, Fred? We got about 7 minutes, and I want you to take five of that and tell us about that conference.
Well, what the conference was leftists. That's what is a leftist? But a liberal who's satisfied with the way things are, and they're dissatisfied enough to talk about it, but not enough to do anything about it.
Do anything about exactly what it is.
We had this conference, and Jesse Jackson, it used to be called the Socialist Conference.
Wow.
So they invited Jesse Jackson to be the keynote speaker, and one of the things that Lynn in prison, when she heard of it, she says, what's the matter? They couldn't get Obama? You know, what are they talking about? Leftist conference.
Yeah.
And then we had, what's his name from the Black Commentator, and I keep forgetting his name, to say in front of an audience of thousands that Obama never said these things. You just misinterpreted him.
Mm.
And never
said which things?
Never said single-payer health care. Never said that he was going to end the war. Never said that he was going to deal with a job.
See.
We just misinterpreted him.
Mm-hmm.
Was this? I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just have to ask: was this person from Black Commentators kind of pro Obama?
He is pro Obama, and I'm going to ask my friend here. I keep forgetting his name.
I see. Not Larry Pinkney.
Fletcher.
Right.
Bill. Yeah.
And there were three, and I said to these people,
the Black Commentator,
and there were three of us booing, and we were all together. And I'm saying
Good.
We had this whole thing of the leftist conference, and they weren't booing with us.
No.
And I looked around, and there was
pleasant applause. And then Jesse stands up and says, he never said single payer, and this is the first step towards a health plan. Well, anybody who knows anything about that health plan knows that that's the old Malcolm had it right. Stick a knife in you and pull it back, you know, like an inch, is not helping you.
No.
And this is what they're talking about doing. They're going to keep the health thing a private, proper organization instead of a health care plan. We're giving them trillions. We're taking money out of the Medicare for seniors, and they're on their way. And he's giving away the company store to the rich again on this basis. And there he was, Fletcher and Jesse Jackson cheering it on, and the so-called leftist conference wasn't even booing him.
You know, anytime I hear Jesse anywhere, I would like to stand clear of that. Because I know that if it's not about money,
he's not going to be there.
Yeah, he's not going to be there. If he's not receiving some kind of stipend, he's not going to show up. He's not going to stand. See, a lot of kind of people are deceived. They think that he's standing up for the people. He's standing up for his pocket.
Exactly. And the sad truth of the matter is that here we are in America today. We're dying. And the people who are supposed to be helping us are comfortable with where they are.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But listen to this, Rap. We got about 3 minutes. I'm going to let Libby take a minute, and I'll take a minute, and you'll take the rest. Go ahead, Libby.
can you give me a topic?
Any topic. You want to talk
about
the takeover?
Freedom.
You want to talk about Obama? You want to talk about yourself? I don't care. Just
give it
to me.
At the protest in my town that occurs at rush hour every weekday, a sign has been held for the first time this past week that names Obama. And I think people here are lovers of Obama. And I did read someone right when he got elected, there was an article, I don't remember who wrote, but this person kind of forecasted, this writer forecasted, it will take 4 years for the liberals to admit that Obama is really who he is.
Mm-hmm.
It will take 4 years. But we did have our first sign out there, and it said Obamer, O-B-O-M-B-E-R.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very large, you know, well-printed sign, black on white print. Obamer, and then under that it says in Pakistan, and under that it says killed more in 10 months than Bush 8 years. Now, that sounds almost impossible,
yeah.
But it's anybody in Pakistan who was the victim of his multiple drone missile attacks.
Wow.
It could be Pakistan people, Afghanistan people, Americans, but in 10 months, he has authorized more killings in Pakistan than all during the Bush 8 years. And granted, I mean, I guess, you know, Bush wasn't concentrating on Pakistan, but
right,
we were still in there.
Absolutely. All
now
right, well, listen, let me do this. I want everybody to know, soon as the new financial manager come into the city of Benton Harbor, we will be picketing.
Now
that
here
is a must. We will be lining up, picketing the city of Benton Harbor, new financial manager. We're preparing now to make signs and do everything else. Anybody who want to join us on this, you're welcome. Also, I want to give a shout out to my grandson, Blake Williams, and Ison Brown and Kaya Brown. I want y'all to know they're living in Columbus, Ohio. Let them know that we love you, and I expect you to continue this fight for the rest of your life. Go ahead, Ralph. You got about a minute and a half.
Be prepared for Obama to go into Iran and bomb Iran.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Be prepared to come out in the streets in mass and demonstrate against that. And I want everybody to think again. Lynn Stewart, 150 Park Row, New York.
Hey, Ralph, I wrote her.
MCC, Lynn Stewart, the attorney who fought for our community and our people for 40 years. She's a white American lawyer who has done great work for our community and worked for the blind sheikh and ended up in jail. And write her a letter. Lynn Stewart, 150 Park Row, New York, New York, 10007, and 53504-054. And it's if you, you know, look her up on the email, Lynn Stewart, ask anyone about it. Write her a letter, put your return address there, tell her of your problems. She will answer you and try to help solve them as best she can from inside that prison. She is no longer a lawyer. She's been disbarred. She will not practice law until we do something about it. But she will work to help you and, you know, do things that will make it better, not just make you feel better.
Right. Hey, that's wonderful. Hey, Ralph.
Yes.
Good job. I wrote her a letter. Did she have you spoke with her?
They have shut her mail off for a week. Now, I'm going in to see her tomorrow, hopefully, and I cross my fingers because I'm expecting at any time for them to say, no, not you.
Yeah.
She cannot call her lawyers. She cannot make phone calls. They've cut off her email, and now for a week they cut off her mail.
Wow.
So, and because she made a press release, but that's not the reason. As long as she's out there, she's telling the truth, and she can tell it so well, so clear. And what is it? If the truth cannot be told so as to be understood and not be believed, they don't need truth tellers like that.
Oh, absolutely. Hey, Ralph, look, our time is up, but why don't we start the show off next week talking about Lynn?
Great.
Okay?
Great.
And listen, we're out of time. Libby, I want to thank you. Valerie, I want to thank you for coming in. Dorothy,
thank you,
Dorothy, very much. That's my wife, who I love dearly. She's been a true soldier, a true warrior, and I appreciate her.
Yeah,
and,
but who does the cooking?
Let me. Well, we split that. So let's keep it that way. But Ralph, thank you so much. And listen, next week, let's start talking about Lynn a little bit more.
And I'm going to laugh at myself because I'm told that I talk too much and I'm too long-winded.
Ralph, I love you. See, we on a roll.
Okay.
Listen,
yeah.
I will talk to you next week, Ralph. Have a good weekend, everybody.
Thank you.
I'll see you later.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Hello?